I have a story to tell you about a monk whose name we do not know. I have told it to you before, but since we also have newer brothers here who have not heard it, I will bring it up again as a reminder. It has to do with the prayer, the Jesus prayer, because the prayer is enormously beneficial, and it is exactly what we need to help us spiritually on our spiritual journey. Here on the Holy Mountain, many years ago, there lived a monk who at first was a man of great spiritual zeal and discipline. And from what emerges in his account, it seems that through prayer he had acquired an abundance of the grace of God. But experience showed that he apparently fell into pride. He came to believe that his spiritual state set him apart from the other monks. It was therefore only natural that grace should withdraw, leaving him exposed to temptation. And temptation shook him to his very foundations, so that he might truly understand that without the grace of God, a person cannot stand against the devil and emerge victorious from the struggle. After grace had withdrawn, he found himself in a state utterly dominated by the passions, and he fell very low indeed. His first fall was neglecting his duties. That negligence gave birth to many other evils. He lost his patient endurance amid temptations and began blaming every temptation on the brothers of the monastery. One brother was at fault, another irritated him, another did not treat him with love, and he found fault with yet another for something else. This produced in him a state of hatred and malice toward the brothers of the monastery. He blamed everyone. All kinds of logismoi, intrusive thoughts, assailed him from every direction, and as he continued to consent to them, he lost more and more ground, while the devil gained it. He completely abandoned his spiritual duties. He no longer went down to the church, and the devil advanced further and further, gradually winning over his heart. Great Lent came, and he got worse. Holy Week drew near. On Great Friday, he too had a thought, and he said, "Let me go down to church as well. Like the lowest of men, at least on this day, let the brothers see that I came down too." He sat at the back, in the lite, the entrance part of the church, and followed the service, weighed down as he was with all those thoughts. When the brothers came to the various encomia, the lamentations chanted before the crucified one, as he stood there paying attention, a deep stirring came over his soul, and he said, "What was I once, and what have I become now?" So many brothers here possess a spiritual state. They are filled with catenixis, with compunction, and they weep. But I sit here watching, dry as a stone. Wretched man that I am! How far I have fallen! What have I come to? As he reproached himself, his heart began to stir, and the prayer within his heart began to say the Jesus prayer. For once, the Jesus prayer had been his own treasured possession. As the Jesus prayer continued, it created warmth and catenixis, compunction within his heart. He remembered his many sins, his spiritual degradation, and how he had lost the inner monk within himself. He began to pray accordingly, imploring Christ to have mercy on him and to let something fall even into his own heart like a drop of grace, the grace Christ bestowed upon the world through his sacrifice on the cross. As the service progressed, so did the state within him. The Jesus prayer increased and blazed up. His heart was filled with grace, and the prayer flowed by itself, unceasingly, and with spiritual fruit. He could no longer remain standing, so he sat in his stall and continued praying the Jesus prayer in this way. As time passed, his love grew exceedingly great. The love of Christ took possession of his whole heart. He began to pray for his enemies and for the brothers, forgiving everyone and everything. Without realizing what was happening, he found himself in a vast open place. In the distance stood a gathering, a group of people dressed in the clothing of ancient times. They were engaged in conversation among themselves. Then the youngest among them, who was also the most glorious and beautiful, stepped away from the group. He approached the monk and said to him, "Brother, I know that you wish to go to the king. I intend to help you, to guide you, and to take you to the king." The monk replied, "My brother, I know of no king, nor do I have any business with one, so I have no thought at all of meeting this king of whom you speak." "You're acting as though you don't know," this young man says to him, "as though you don't know the king, and as though you have no business with him. But you do know him, and you do have business with him. Come, then, follow me, and I will lead you safely to the king." Without quite willing it, the monk felt an inner impulse to follow this man, because the young man's whole bearing inspired confidence in him. So he followed him along the road until they came to an extremely narrow path, so narrow that it could not fit two people side by side. Naturally, the guide went ahead and the monk followed behind, beset by countless logismoi, intrusive thoughts. Who is this guide? What is his name? Where is he taking me now? Who is the king? What business do I have with him? And many other thoughts besides. At one point, the guide turned his head and said to him, Brother, do you know why you have all these logismoi, these intrusive thoughts warring within you? Your logismoi and your whole spiritual decline came because you abandoned the Jesus prayer. Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. This is where your whole condition began. So keep saying the Jesus prayer and follow me faithfully. Once the monk was convinced that this man could read his thoughts and had found the cause of them, he gave himself over to following him with far greater trust, and he felt a love for this guide growing inside him. And so they continued on their way. After emerging from that narrow path, they found themselves before a river whose depth was immeasurable. The two banks were joined only by a single round log. The guide said, Brother monk, we must now cross from up here to the other side, so that we may continue on the road to the king. But how can we cross over on this? Do not be afraid. Just give me your hand and follow me. The monk gave him his hand, and the guide held it firmly as they began crossing on the log. But the log swayed, and the monk's heart began to tremble. The guide said, Do not be afraid, follow me. The monk was comforted again, because everything about the guide showed him to be utterly trustworthy, and his heart began to rejoice. After they had crossed over, he said, Now we will walk uphill and meet the king. As they made their way upward, they encountered a large company of monks dressed in radiant red garments fashioned in the monastic style, and their faces shone with great splendor. As soon as they drew near, the guide greeted them, saying, Rejoice, venerable fathers of Christ. Rejoice, you too, O great martyr George of Christ. When will you bring our brother here? When it is the Lord's will, he replied. When they had moved on, the brother realized that his guide was the great martyr who had indeed been his protector and guide throughout his life. He embraced him, began kissing him, and spoke many loving words to him. After that, of course, once he realized it was Saint George, he would not let go of the hand that was holding him. As they go on climbing higher, they meet another group of monks, but quite few in number. These, of course, were wearing the same robes, except that they had very great glory, and on their faces as well. After they had greeted one another, the brother asks Saint George, my Saint George, why are these monks so few, and why do they have such great radiance? The great martyr answers him that these monks are the monks of the present time, and that is why they are all glorious. But, Saint of God, is it possible for people and monks to be saved in times such as these? There is no virtue, there is no good example, and we do not see anyone being saved. Yes, he replied, it is difficult for anyone to be saved today, but the few who will be saved, as you see here before you, will possess very great glory in heaven, and God will number them among the great saints, because true virtue is indeed so scarce today. Those who struggle with their limited strength, making use of whatever they have read and whatever good resolve they possess, and who overcome the difficulty and reach paradise, will receive glory equal to that of the great saints. As he said this, they continued onward and reached a very great palace. When they entered, they came into an immense open space filled with a multitude of monks. All the monks ran forward and gathered around Saint George and the brother. After greeting Saint George, they asked him, When will you bring our brother here? We are waiting for him and praying for him. The saint replied, I shall bring him when it is the Lord's will. Then they came to the eastern side, where they saw before them something like an iconostasis, a heavenly sight with two immense icons of Christ and the most holy Theotokos. As they stood there, all the monks began chanting, It is truly meet, and they chanted it so beautifully, so heavenly, and with such grace that the monk said, In this world I have never heard such an It is truly meet, so melodious and so full of joy. When this hymn to our most holy Theotokos had ended, The icon of Christ opened like a door, and from within came a voice saying, "Great is your compassion, O Son of God, toward the sons of men." And immediately the great martyr George went through the open door, leaving the brother behind with the monks, and proceeded farther within. There in the depths the Lord was seated upon his throne of glory, and his face shone like a thousand suns around him. Like a heavenly backdrop, the ranks of angels stood in order. Saint George went forward, and when he reached the throne of Christ, he made a prostration in metanoia, and kissed the right hand of our Christ. The Lord God rose and received him. And after he had sat down, he said to him, "What is your request, George?" "I have come," he said, "to entreat you, my master, immaculate Lord, for the brother whom I have brought, the monk. Certainly he is not worthy of mercy, but before your compassion, my Lord, this is nothing." The Lord answered him, "This monk is not worthy of mercy, George, because he abandoned his duties. In a way, he despised the grace I gave him. He tasted deeply of my love, yet he refused to rise from his negligence. Even though I sent him spiritual men who urged him to do so, they said many things to him, but he did not come to his senses. He did not make a new beginning. He did not enter into metanoia, repentance, and he did not change. Therefore, he is not worthy." Saint George knelt and began to recount before him the torments of martyrdom that he had endured out of love for him, seeking in this way to move the Lord to change his judgment concerning the brother and have mercy on him. But the Lord continued to say that the monk was not worthy, and that George should not plead for him. When the holy great martyr saw that even this could not change the Lord's judgment, he resorted to the all-powerful appeal. He set before him the sacrifice upon the cross, which he himself, being divine, had offered for mankind. The sacrifice, therefore, was divine and atoning, and no obstacle could stand before it. He said to him, "My Lord, remember the death on the cross that you endured for mankind, and that a single drop of your most holy blood can blot out all the sins of the world, the sins of all people, and save every sinner. What, then, is it for a negligent and insignificant monk?" Then our Christ bowed his immaculate head and said, "Yes, George, as you have said, even one drop of my holy blood can blot out all the sins of mankind. Let your will be done." Then he motioned to the archangel standing near him to bring the cup of love, of divine love. The archangel then brought him something like a holy chalice, filled with its contents. The Lord took it, gave it to Saint George, and said, "Take this, go outside, and illumine the brother. It is the cup of love." Saint George took it and went outside. He gave it to the monk, who drank from it and became entirely filled with the light of divine love. And as we know, perfect love casts out fear. Without anyone saying a word to him, moved by the power of Christ's love, he set off and ran inside. He fell at the feet of Christ and began to embrace and kiss them, weeping as he melted with love for Christ. Then the Lord said to Saint George, "Take my brother and lead him back into the world to struggle. I will help him recover his former spiritual state, and afterward our will shall be done." Saint George then took him by the hand. After they had both bowed down before the Lord, they went back out into the hall where the multitude of monks had gathered. The brothers again surrounded them with great love and began repeating, "Brother, know that what is happening to you now is not sleep and is not a dream. It is real. It is true that you came here, that you saw the Lord, and that we are telling you these things which you now hear. You have not yet experienced death and its difficulty. Death is fearful, brother. It is something very hard. It is like walking barefoot upon burning coals. Therefore, keep death in remembrance and compel yourself to struggle. We help you here through our prayers, and we are waiting for you. So do whatever you can, and help yourself as well. Saint of God, George, you too help the brother, since you are his protector." And at once they set out and went down, and again found the two mules that had come to meet them. The monks said the same things to the brother, and as they drew near to cross the deep river once more in the dugout canoe, Saint George sat down and said to him, "Brother, listen to what I am going to tell you. Everything that has just happened to you is real. You truly met me, and we went and saw the Lord. You were assured that your spiritual condition is not at all good, and we went and received forgiveness from the Lord. Now there can be no further delay in putting an end to your negligence and this entire state of collapse. If you are negligent, if you continue in negligence and refuse to rise, I do not know what awaits you. But amid your temptations and spiritual struggle, know that the names of Christ and of the Most Holy Theotokos are of very great help. Therefore, call upon the Most Holy Theotokos in your times of need, and she will help you. The brother, of course, also promised that from then on he would live watchfully. He thanked the saint for all that he had done, and they set out for the dugout canoe. When they had boarded and reached about the middle of the river, the demons began to rock the canoe. Saint George suddenly vanished, and the brother was left alone. The demons began to shout, "Now that George has gone, let us throw the monk into the river." And they began rocking the canoe violently. In his fear, the brother cried out, "Most holy Theotokos, help me." At once he found himself back in his stall in the church with the prayer, the Jesus prayer, being said by itself within him. When he recovered from this vision, he thought, "Now I must change." He said to himself, "I must change, or else I am lost." And indeed the brother changed. He struggled greatly, recovered his former spiritual state, and once again came to know the greatness of God's love, now even more deeply. And he sat down and wrote the whole story of what happened to him in a little booklet, and the name stuck, "The Vision of an Anonymous Monk." So this is a monk from relatively recent times. From this whole account, we see first what happened to him. One way or another, there was some situation, perhaps, that deceived him and caught him in a trap, and then the result was that negligence was born in him, negligence in his duties, negligence about his thoughts, about keeping watch over the nous, the mind. It began with the logismoi, because the inward betrayal had already been taking place little by little. Then came negligence in his duties. He was stripped of the grace of God, and afterward he grew cold toward the brothers. He then reached the point of harboring and feeling hatred toward them. He even imagined that he had enemies along with many other things that were not recorded in his little booklet. It is easy enough for us to understand. But as Saint George, the great martyr, also said, "You abandoned the prayer, brother, and that is why negligence came upon you." His negligence in the prayer, the Jesus prayer, is what brought about his fundamental fall. Then we see how powerful the presence of a saint can be, and why we must love all the saints. Each person, of course, may have a particular love for one or two saints in particular. And the fathers approve of this. What is striking in this whole account is that this brother had first made prayer so completely his own, and that afterwards he neglected the matter of watchfulness, of nepsis, and that lack of watchfulness brought about his fall, and this fall, in turn, little by little, took his prayer away from him, stole it from him, and after that he suffered this total shipwreck. Therefore, this prayer of our Christ is everything for us. It is for every one, of course, but for the monk it is his all. For at first, whenever this monk faced a temptation, he fought against it with the Jesus prayer, and in this way attained the grace and love of Christ. He certainly used other means as well, but the prayer was his principal weapon. That is why the saint told him that, by abandoning this prayer, he had fallen into negligence and every temptation had come upon him. We must pay close attention to this matter of prayer. If by the grace of God we pray with the name of Christ, we will feel spiritually secure. We will feel that in our spiritual hands we are holding a perfect weapon, a weapon before which the demons tremble.
Good.
Even if this prayer is merely being repeated while our nous is somewhat distracted, the demons still hear it. They hear the name of Christ, and therefore they cannot easily approach a person, steal away his nous, and lead it into sin. That is why, in every task we do throughout the day, the benefit is great when we say the Jesus prayer with our lips as well. We've said this many times. It's not only that the one who prays this way benefits himself, he also benefits his neighbor, his brother, whom he has a duty to help. Because as the other man hears the prayer, at some point his mind will be wandering off somewhere else, and right away, through the prayer, he'll feel a kind of reproach inside him. That very thing will convict him. Hold on, my brother here is praying, and my mind is off wandering. Here I sit talking idly, and he is the one gaining. So let me pray too. Let me begin the prayer myself. At the same time, He will remember that praying is a command of the elder, that it is a constant admonition and exhortation. Therefore, if I engage in idle talk, whether inwardly or aloud, I am disobeying the spiritual command given by the elder. If by the grace of God we hold fast to the Jesus prayer, then by that grace alone we shall remain standing, for our own strength is not great. We are spiritually weak human beings. Evils are many and powerful. The germ of sin has grown strong because the principle of spiritual health within us has grown weak. The Jesus prayer is also regarded as medicine for the soul. It heals. It is a medicine which, when a person applies it to any wound or sickness, brings healing. Satan knows this very well and has taken careful note of it. That is why he has taken every measure to obstruct this healing, this noetic healing of the soul. He uses every means to hinder the Jesus prayer, so that we may not grow strong. Whenever we feel emptiness, hollowness, and spiritual dryness within ourselves, we should know that our practice of the Jesus prayer has declined. Let us not run elsewhere, searching and searching for some other cause. We need only recognize one simple truth: the Jesus prayer is lacking. This is precisely why there is this spiritual emptiness, and why we feel dryness and a lack of catanixis of compunction within ourselves. When we do not feel rightly toward our brother, our neighbor, when we feel coldness or something unwholesome toward him, it is because the Jesus prayer has grown weak within us. It is impossible for true prayer to be present, for the Jesus prayer to be gathered and attentive, with the nous recollected, and yet for us to harbor such feelings. As monks of the Holy Mountain, according to the words of our holy fathers, we are the very last of men, possessing no spiritual state at all. I am the first among them. But as we saw here, in the story this brother told us, by God's grace something really can happen inside us when we take hold of the Jesus prayer properly. Let us struggle in this matter, for it is everything. Let us avoid idle talk, both in our thoughts and in our speech. Let us carry out our duties diligently, fervently, and with longing. Even the smallest task, when done in this way, with longing and a good disposition, brings spiritual benefit. Let us be watchful in everything, because prayer does not advance on its own. It needs support from our whole spiritual life. It must be helped from many sides. If, on the one hand, a person compels himself to say the Jesus prayer, but on the other neglects obedience, spiritual struggle or vigilance over the logosmoi, the intrusive thoughts, and lets his nous wander here and there without making any effort to recollect it, then the prayer will not be able to advance or accomplish great things. We must not build with one hand and tear down with the other. In that way we shall never accomplish anything rightly. Let us give ourselves to prayer while also being attentive to everything else. Then, by the grace of God, we shall be able to advance and feel that something within us has changed and that we are becoming monks inwardly as well. Outwardly, we have all become monks, but inwardly, only those who have compelled themselves have truly become monks. After God and our most holy Theotokos, let us also entreat our saints. Since we see that they possess such boldness before God, let us ask them to intercede for us and protect us along our spiritual path, so that we too, like them, may safely reach the stormless harbor of the kingdom of heaven.